Welcome to the Money Mindset and Investing Podcast, a financial literacy podcast series with myself, Sahir Anwari.
And myself, Kola Badamasi. We are the co-founders of SublimeTrading.io and the Griffin Fund.
So welcome to today's episode, guys. We've been asked a number of times if we could do a podcast on our backgrounds and how we got into investing. And so this is really what today's episode is about. So let's do this, Kola. We've known each other since 2007, and we've got to know each other quite well over the years, but I'm sure there's still plenty to learn about each other. So why don't you start us off by telling us about where you grew up?
Okay, so I grew up in South London. I went to primary school there. I went to secondary school, lived a pretty much regular life. So no background in financial services. I didn't know anyone in the industry. So I just lived a regular life, kid growing up in South London, really. How about yourself?
Yeah, I grew up in the complete opposite end of London. I grew up in Northwest London. And yep, like yourself, regular background, mum and dad, younger sister, normal childhood. My dad grew up working a couple of jobs. My mum was a stay-at-home wife, a loving family. You know, I can't complain about my childhood. It was happy. My dad obviously was working hard to make sure that we had food on the table. I remember when I got my first Game Boy and all the things that you want as a kid. So I can't complain. Did you enjoy growing up in South London? I know even now, you know, going from north to south, it seems like it's almost a different world sometimes. So did you enjoy growing up in South London?
Yeah, I enjoyed South London. The culture was really good. Had a lot of friends around me from school. So we used to hang out a lot on the weekends. I enjoyed it a lot. We had parks that we used to go to play football. So a fun childhood for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm assuming you were quite sporty as well as a kid. I know we talk about football, but did you used to play a lot of sport growing up?
I remember in secondary school, even primary school, we used to play football with bottle tops and bottles because we didn't have much football back then. We had to improvise. But going into college, I started to play for the college team. So I started to get really good. And then in the university, I played for the university team as well.
Football.
So
yeah, what position did you play?
Center back.
Nice. I can see you as a center back, man, because you've got the stature for it. So yeah.
Used to hold that line really strong.
Did you ever captain your teams?
No, I don't think I ever did, but I pretty much played like a captain. I sort of bossed the whole team around because I was always at the back. I could see what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, nice. Yeah, so myself as well. I mean, I love playing sports. I used to play for the school football team. I played for the school tennis team. I played for the school basketball team. I was also the chess captain in school as well. Won a number of trophies in chess. Played for a number of cricket teams. It was probably the sport that I enjoyed the least out of all the sports that I played. But strangely, I was really good at batting. I was a chess captain. I was a cricket captain. I was an opening batsman. I didn't love cricket as much as I loved football and basketball back then, but I was good at it.
Yeah, so what was about cricket that you didn't like much?
It's just slow. As a batsman, I loved it because you're there all the time, you know, running between the wickets and you're in the thick of it. But sometimes when you're fielding in cricket, you could be standing around for a long time, and cricket matches can last days sometimes, depending on who you're playing. So I was good at it. I enjoyed the people that I played cricket with. There was also an element, I don't know whether things have changed now, but there was also an element of who you knew. If your mum was making sandwiches for the cricket team, their son would get preference. And there was all of that going on back then. It doesn't matter how talented you were. It was definitely an element of who you knew in the cricket team, in the cricket setup, amongst the coaches and the staff. The older I got, the more I realized that this was going on, the more I fell out of love with it and moved away from cricket in many ways and picked up other hobbies and interests, you know, as you do as you go older. So yeah, moving on from school, you then obviously went on to do GCSEs and A-levels. Did you do A-levels?
I did both. So I did GCSEs at school and got quite good grades in my GCSEs. High in maths and English.
Yeah, nice.
Then I went over to college. In college, I chose media production, drama, theatre studies, and also English language and literature.
Nice. The interesting A-levels. Yeah.
Good combination because it's all I wanted to get into the entertainment industry, creative industry. That was a really good combination.
Did you do GCSEs and A-levels in the same place or did you go to a different college?
I did my A-levels at a sixth form college. I was a separate place. I couldn't stay in the same place. I spent 5 years of my life, so I definitely needed to actually leave. I did have a few friends that stayed in my school because there was actually a sixth form college in my secondary school. So yeah. I stayed there for an extra 2 years, but I couldn't do that. I needed to venture out and just be in a different location altogether.
Yeah, great. And did you do those A-levels with an eye in terms of you knew what you wanted to do at university? So that's why you picked those A-levels. Or did you pick those A-levels because you just enjoyed them?
I picked those A-levels because I enjoyed it and I wanted to get into the TV industry. So I wanted to become a film director, film producer. So I wanted to work behind the cameras, basically.
Yeah, nice. I find it really fascinating when I have these sort of conversations with people about that childhood, particularly about that period, because when I compare it to myself, I had no idea what I wanted to do at university. And the A-levels that I picked were maths and mechanics, chemistry, and physics, right? And I picked those because being of the background that I am, the cultural background, academia was pushed. I wasn't forced into it. I never had parents that sort of forced me into it. But, you know, academia was encouraged. So that's why I picked those A-levels. And then at university, again, I had no idea why I was picking those A-levels. And then I happened to study software engineering at university. Whereas now, when I think about it, if I could go back to my A-levels, I would probably do A-levels similar to the A-levels that you did. I'd probably choose a whole different criteria at A-levels.
I'm quite similar. I think we're all pushed to do something along the lines of make us go in the direction of being a doctor, a lawyer. But I was a bit of a rebel. I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I knew I wasn't going to be happy if I studied law when I didn't want to. So I just chose what I felt I could enjoy. But looking back in that industry, I'm not too sure if university really helps in the creative industry. It's best if you actually go out there and get experience. Because I know a few people who did actually go to university, went straight into the film production company and are doing really well right now. I'm not saying don't go to university. I'm just saying that you have to really think about if it's going to help you go in the direction you need to go.
Yeah, nice. Really good advice there. Yeah, there's this idea that A-levels are a must when in fact, you know, you could go and get an apprenticeship potentially and that could propel your career quicker than going down the route of doing A-levels. So it's all about weighing up your options and doing your research and then figuring out your own path. Hindsight is a great thing, right, Collar?
Yeah, definitely.
Which university did you go to?
At the time, it was called University of Luton, but now it's called University of Bedfordshire.
Was it a three-year course or a four-year course?
Just 3 years.
Okay, so you didn't do any year in industry or any professional training as part of your time in university? Yeah, okay. I went to City University in London, and as I already mentioned, I did software engineering. Just to rewind back a little bit, so the first time I did my A-levels, I actually didn't do very well. I got three E's. Which, you know, three E's is not great. But I got what I deserved because I put no time and effort. My time was distracted. I found my first ever lady friend, proper lady friend, back when I was 16. And my first attempt at A-levels didn't go too well. Second time round, I got two B's and a C, which isn't too bad. And then I ended up doing software engineering at City University. I was there for 4 years, so 2 years in the campus, then 1 year working out in industry. And then the final year, so it was actually a four-year course, so a sandwich course, effectively. And one of the main things that I learned at university is that you have to enjoy what you're doing in life if it's going to be something that takes up the bulk of your day, i.e. a full-time job, a full-time career. And I quickly learned that at university, which is if you are going to do something, make sure you enjoy it. Did you feel the same at university? Did you find that you enjoyed what you studied?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Really did enjoy it. There was actually one useful lesson I actually remember because I did media production in university. And it was actually one lesson which I felt like was the best lesson was when they actually brought in a real TV director. I think he had worked on a few TV soaps. And that's when I learned the most, really and truly. This is why I go back to saying that it might have been better if I had just gone into the industry because I actually learned better from someone in the industry rather than just a teacher teaching me how to work behind the scenes on the film set.
Yeah, that makes sense. Was that a module or was that just a one-off session?
It was part of the module, but we did have a few sessions with this guy. And yeah, it proved really, really useful.
So when you graduated from university, what happened next?
Funny enough, when I was in college, I was part of a TV show. It was when few of us were allowed into the army. It was on a documentary on BBC Two, on a show called Inside Out. And I kept in contact with the producers. So when I left university, I actually had a potential job offer in the BBC. But by that time, I had already changed my mindset about where I wanted to go in life and actually refused that job offer, which could have taken me in a whole different direction. I actually got into investing by the time and I decided to pursue that and learn it. And I didn't want to go into a career and get distracted. I wanted to just work part-time while I was studying how to become an investor.
I just want to pause it there for a second, because before we move on to the whole investing side of things, I just want to go back, because you mentioned when we were allowed in the army, you didn't actually join the army. It was a TV series based on your time in the army. Is that correct? Have I understood that correctly?
So the whole project of when I went into the army, it was for a period of 2 weeks. So at that time, I was in college, so around 16, between 16 and 18, and I was mentoring young boys who were kicked out of school. So we just helped them, mentored them, helped them get back in the right direction. And yeah, it was part of a project which allowed us to actually take them into the army and stay there for a period of 2 weeks. The six of us that went, we were split up into three. So three of us went, if I recall, into the Horse Guards, and the rest of us were just sent to the regular army. So we were on base. We literally lived like soldiers.
So you were based in actual army barracks?
Yeah, in actual army barracks. At the same time as them, went to eat with them. We got to train with some guns, not real guns, but replica guns, and learned how to disassemble a gun and put it together again. Did the physical training, which is really tough.
Yeah.
It was a really, really amazing experience. It was covered quite widely in the press at the time. It was quite an amazing experience.
So it was quite a groundbreaking project in many ways.
Yeah, it was, yeah. The first time it's ever been done, and I think it's probably the last time it's ever been done.
Your school was chosen as part of this project, and then you were then assigned a kid as well who had been kicked out of school or whatever the case was. So you were assigned one particular mentee in many ways. So you were the mentor and you were assigned one mentee and you had to look after this one mentee for the whole 2 weeks?
It wasn't actually my school. I was a mentor at a small center which helped young boys that were excluded from schools.
Nice. So you chose to be a mentor at this place? Yeah. You're volunteering?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Okay.
And we weren't assigned to an individual student, but there were three mentors and three mentees in there as a group. So we just helped, really truly helped and supported each other. And I remember one of the mentees, I remember one thing he learned from me. We were given an allowance and I used to save my allowance because I was a really good saver. And he actually, I remember him saying, you know what, because you're saving, I'm going to save too. So I remember him learning that for me and just giving them other advice that can help them in life.
Yeah, fantastic. It's the early stages of ultimately you being the mentor that you are with Sublime Trading. Now that you look back on it, you know, life training you in these different ways, because saving money really is the foundation of everything when it comes to investing. If you can't save, you don't have a budget, you've got nothing to invest. So, you know, it's really interesting. I didn't actually know that about you. So, you know, going back to what I said at the beginning, there's so much still to learn about each other, even though we've known each other since 2007. Okay, so fast forward again back to when you've finished university. So at this point, you finish university, but you haven't actually pursued a career in what you've studied. Your mindset and your vision has kind of changed at this point.
Yeah. I just felt like I was going to be in a rat race where it was 9 to 5 and that was it. And the main thing that took me in a different direction was being introduced to a book called Rich Dad Poor Dad. I joined a sales company and they introduced me to that book. I read the book. I read it a few times and it just blew me away. It was the introduction to a whole different world for me where I was going to take command of my life as opposed to just living a life in the system and just getting caught up in a career which I wasn't going to enjoy. It just changed my whole mindset. And I'm really grateful for reading that book at such a young age, because the journey from then till now has just been an amazing journey.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to talk about books a little bit later on.
Okay, so I've spoken a bit about myself. So how about yourselves here? Have you ever had any sort of impulse to join the army based on...
It's funny you should say that, because in secondary school, we had the cadets.
Oh, wow.
And I joined the cadets for a bit. And then I was just like, nah, this isn't for me. I'm going to stick to playing basketball and football and cricket. And it was interesting. They had a recruitment day for the cadets. And we had quite a big playing field. And they came down with a couple of their army jeeps. And I remember sitting in the back and they'd whip us around in this jeep. And, you know, it was all really exciting. And I was just like, yeah, I want to do this. And then I joined the cadets and then I was like, no, this isn't for me. So I didn't last too long in the cadets. So I gave it a try. But I stuck to sports. That's about as far as my experience went with the army. Looking back now, I'm grateful for that. But university, yeah, that was a whole different ballgame. As I said before, the biggest lesson I learned in life when at university was that you have to make sure that you enjoy what you're doing. And I find it really difficult to understand if a 16-year-old actually knows what they want to do at 16. I know there's people out there who are probably born to be doctors, and they know from a very young age they want to be doctors, they want to be football players, they want to be artists. They just kind of have that inkling in them, and they follow their dreams and they become exceptional at whatever they choose. But that wasn't me. You know, I was extremely confused, I would say, from 15, 16 about why am I studying this? What am I doing? Do I enjoy any of this stuff? I was just going through the motions because everyone else around you is going through the motions. And you don't want to disappoint your parents in many ways. So you end up doing your GCSEs, you end up choosing A-levels, you go to university. And then the older you get, the more you start understanding yourself, the more you want to break free of those shackles ultimately that have been placed on you. Not intentionally, but expectations ultimately are there. So university, when I finished, it was a real relief because I'd finished university. I only managed to get a 2.2, so I scraped through university. Again, it was more a reflection of my application to university as opposed to my ability. It was how much time I spent studying and doing the courses and doing the coursework. Spent very little time, to be honest with you. But I graduated, I got a 2.2, and then the next step was to go out into the big bad world and work a 9-to-5. And I started applying for jobs, you know, all these engineering jobs. And I was just like, no, this is not what I want to do. And then I had this moment of clarity where things changed. And I was in the gym, I was working out, and I met my friend who I hadn't seen for a very, very long time. And I knew that he went to Sussex University to do psychology. And I met him in the gym here in London. I hadn't seen him for a couple of years, and he looked tanned. He looked great. He looked amazing. I was like, where have you been? He goes, I've been in Spain teaching English for the last year. So what do you mean you've been in Spain? I thought you studied psychology. He said, no, you do a TEFL course. I don't know if people have heard of TEFL. Teaching English as a foreign language is a short course, 4 or 5 weeks. Once you've got that course under your belt, you can travel the world and teach English. And at that moment, everything changed for me. I left the gym. I went home. I did my research. I then found a college doing a course down the road for me, paid for the course, finished the course in 4 weeks, and I was done. I was now ready to go. And so I started doing my research, and I found a job teaching English in Taiwan. Wow. And I left. I graduated in 2002. And January 2003, I find myself in Taiwan. People who have done that will understand what I'm talking about. You know, I landed in Taiwan. I knew nothing around me. Everything was in Chinese writing. The only signs that I recognized were McDonald's and Nokia and Burger King, all the famous brands that we know. But, you know, all the regular shops, the news agents and estate agents and the supermarkets, etc., they were all in Chinese writing. So it's completely surreal. But it was a year that completely molded and shaped my life. In fact, it was a couple of years because I spent some time in Taiwan. I then spent some time in Japan and the Philippines teaching English. But what I learned is that there's no money. Even though I was enjoying life and I was having a great time, I was getting to know myself, my mind really expanded to what is possible. There's no money in it. So I came back to London. And when I came back to London, I then pursued a career in what is truly my passion back then, which was photography. I learned photography in a dark room. I can make dark room prints. That's a skill that's almost lost now because of the digital format. But, you know, I learned in the dark room. I then pursued a career in photography. I started working with a couple of guys. We created a collective and we ended up doing work for Coca-Cola, Audi, real big brands because the money in photography is in advertising photography. We had images in Vogue, in Harper's Bazaar, in Tatler. So we're doing some really, really interesting stuff. But again, there comes a point where you realize that the money that you're making, which we were making good money, is it worth the time that I was putting in? Because photography is long, long, long days. When you're on a photo shoot, you could be working 15, 16, 17 hours a day, 2, 3, 4, 5 days on the trot. By the end of it, you're absolutely knackered. So what I learned during my careers, if you like. So when I studied software engineering and I worked for a year at software, I had no passion in it. The potential to earn money was good, but there was no passion. I then became an English teacher. which is great. I got to travel the world, meet interesting people, really learn about myself, but there's no money in it. I then became a photographer, loved what I was doing, really interesting jobs, but the hours were horrendous. So what I found throughout my careers is that something is always being sacrificed. And that really didn't sit well with me. And I think that taps into what you were saying as well about working a 9-to-5.
Yes, exactly. So like you, I knew I needed to take control of the direction I wanted my life to go. I think we all need to realize that. We all need to be taught this from a really young age, that whatever choice you make as a child, it's a direction that you can choose to go in, but you can always change your mind as the years go. As you become more familiar with what you want, you can then decide of where you want to go in life.
Yeah, exactly. Just to cut in there, I totally agree with you, Colin. I think you've really made a very, very important point there. A very interesting point is that don't be afraid to change the direction of your life. It's never too late. The older you get, particularly if you get married, if you have kids, there's responsibility, it becomes more difficult. But before you get to that stage, really be aware of the position you're in, which is the ability to make choice. Okay, so let's move on from there. So we're both kind of in similar places at this point in time, Colin, right? So we are working or we're in some kind of career choice, but we're not entirely happy. You've touched upon it already, but how does investing then start creeping into your life? When do you start thinking about this?
Reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad helped me focus in on what I needed to change in my life. And it was a selection of three things. It was either starting my own business, going into real estate, or going into investing for myself. The thing about starting a business and going to real estate, you have to rely on other people. So if you have a property, you have to rely on workers, or a business, you have to rely on staff. So I wanted to rely on no one but myself. And that's what investing allowed me to do. So it relies on you. All you need is you, yourself, a computer, and an internet connection. And that's it. And the trading software. And it was reliant on my ability to have focus and have discipline and learn a system which allows me to make money consistently forever, basically.
Yeah, really good. Exactly. And that's exactly why I gravitated towards investing or trading as well. Because at the time I was working in photography, as already mentioned, I was working long hours. So I wanted something that I could do from home. And as you've already mentioned, if you've got an internet connection, a decent laptop and trading software and a broker account, you're pretty much set up and you're good to go. But then the next set of challenges come in, which is, what is the right way to invest? What is the right way to trade? Who do you learn from? Am I doing the right thing? So this is really where the next stage of investing and trading comes in, which is, you know, learning to apply it correctly. So where did that start for you?
My first encounter with trading was my friend actually dragged me along to an investment course.
Yeah.
So around that time, I was in my early 20s and my friend invited me to a trading course he had paid for a few thousand pounds. I didn't have the money, but he said, you know, if you don't come, I'm going to take someone else with me. So that forced me along. I said, okay, if that's the case, I'm going to go ahead. So it was an intensive 2 days, it was a weekend course. So a 2 day course. We was in a room with a few hundred people. We just found our seats somewhere in the middle. And I literally came into that room expecting to learn about the ticker sign. So, you know, that scrolling tickers you see on the Bloomberg channel.
Or
I expected to learn something about that. I had no idea, no idea what trading was about. And when I was shown all these charts, or just taken back, I didn't actually think I was going to be shown charts, but it was quite interesting the way they presented the whole weekend. But I learned nothing because it was so much information at one point. So I went away with the material they'd given us and I looked for them randomly one day and it all started to sink in. It's like when you're first given some information, it doesn't make sense, but if you allow time, information starts to sink in. So I looked at it and I said, you know what, this is something I can really do. I understand it and it makes a lot of sense. I actually want to pursue it. So I continued learning. I went to different websites online, but these were all day trading strategies, really short-term strategies. What I learned later doesn't really work.
Is that part of the appeal, though, what they were teaching you with day trading and the quick money? Was that part of the appeal of the courses as well?
Of course, because we come from a background of working 9-to-5, don't we?
Yeah.
So the idea of making a set amount of money every day is appealing. But when you actually try to do it, you realize it doesn't work. And not only that, but you're limiting yourself to actually seeing your capital grow exponentially by just applying a longer term strategy.
Yeah.
So the first course, it didn't work. It was very hard to implement. I found another mentor, slightly better strategy, but again, very complicated, very hard to get this strategy to work for me. Some people might have been successful at it. I wasn't. But later on down the line, I was introduced to a friend of a friend, and they introduced me to their mentor. And I slowly watched their website and just watched how they analyzed the markets and applied their investments. And I could see that their strategy worked. This was a more longer term strategy.
This is when trend following is starting to come into your research.
Yes, definitely. So I tried day trading, tried swing trading, very short strategies from a day to up to a few weeks.
Yeah.
But this one was more from a few months to potentially over a year. And what appealed to me about this strategy was that it was a lot simpler. Imagine you're using a strategy which is longer term, less time in front of your computer screens, and also easy to understand, easy to implement. And it just made a lot of sense. It was a no-brainer. So how about yourself?
Very similar, very, very similar backgrounds. I think when you're in a position in life where you're not entirely happy with what you're doing as a 9-to-5, as a job, as a career, which I wasn't, as I said, I did like the photography, but I wasn't happy with the hours that I was putting in. And also, I forgot to mention that at weekends, I was teaching Japanese businessmen English because I was still using my TEFL course, my TEFL qualification as well, while I was here in London. So I was working in photography and then I was simultaneously teaching English to Japanese businessmen at the weekend. So I was actually making really, really good money. I was saving a lot of money, but I wasn't happy. A lot of hours being worked. And so you go online, you start doing your research. And like yourself, I was actually taken to a seminar, a free seminar with my cousin, because my cousin, he had a sort of similar mindset as well. He was a personal trainer and he was, you know, I don't want to be doing this for the rest of my life. There must be other ways we can make money. So we started doing our research. He found this trading course. He actually heard about it on the radio, booked us in, took me down, blown away. You know, it's the first time we've seen the sales pitch like that before. We are totally captivated. And then, of course, they tell you that it's normally £15,000, but if you pay today, it's £5,000. So my cousin and I, we were leaving the room and the salesman at the back, you know, he was like, why aren't you buying it? We were like, £5,000 for two people. That's £10,000. Too much money. He stopped us and he said, how about if we do a 2-for-1? So we paid up £2,500 each and we were on this course. Now we went for the course, which was a couple of weeks later. It was a weekend course. At the end of the weekend, they tried to upsell us to a £25,000 course. This is when we knew we had been had. We didn't learn anything on the weekend. You know, it was just bells and whistles. You know, there was nothing of substance. At the end of it, they tried to sell us the £25,000 course. And of course, in the room next door, you can hear champagne bottles popping off and people screaming for the people that are paying £25,000. You know, and that element of FOMO starts kicking in. You know, are we doing the right thing by walking away? And now in hindsight, walking away was probably the best thing that we ever did, because at the end of the day, guys, you know, if you phone that company up a day later, 2 days later, and are ready to pay £25,000, they're going to take your money. They're not going to tell you, oh yeah, you should have paid it 2 days ago. So my cousin and I, we walked away. Let's think about this. We didn't pay the £25,000 course. And that, by the way, that whole course was based on day trading. And we had tried to implement the strategies. We gave it a chance, but it was so inconsistent. Plus the fact that I was working in photography and teaching English at the weekends, I had literally no time. So when you're working a 9-to-5 or when you're working long hours, and you trying to day trade alongside your career is near enough impossible, because you're effectively running 2 9-to-5 side by side. You can't be doing your job and then having a laptop open and trying to make trades or close trades and your boss is watching over your shoulder. It's just not something that's going to be allowed. At some point, your boss is going to probably sack you or give you a warning and say, hey, don't do that. So it just didn't work. But we persisted. You know, it's quite easy when you've sort of been had and you've paid £5,000 to go, right, this is like, it's just all a big scam. Nothing works. But one thing I learned during that sort of journey is the element of accountability. I think that's something that often gets overlooked. You have to be accountable for your choices. This goes back to what you were saying earlier, Colin, about when you get older to understand you have the ability to make choices and to do the things that are right for you. But at the same time, you've got to then be accountable for your choices. So if the choices don't work out, you've got to be accountable for those choices and understand that you made that choice and you are responsible for that. And you can't blame, you can't continuously blame outside factors. So once I understood that, the journey then continued.
So you're correct. Accountability is really important. When you're accountable, it really forces you to focus on the decisions you're making, especially if you have people around you that are looking up to you as well. It really forces you to really think about the decisions you're making.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you're an older brother or if you're an older sister and there's people watching you, then, you know, you kind of want to be a leader, especially if you are choosing a route that is kind of new to your family, new to your culture. You kind of have to make good decisions. You don't want to be wrong because the pressure is on, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so let's move on to the next stage, 2007, 2008 now. That's when we connected, Kola, right? We met on a trend trading course.
So yeah, we met around there. And I remember you had been there probably a few months before me and you were mentoring other people. So you moved up quite fast. And I remember just seeing your posts about your analysis of the markets. I watched your posts and all the other mentors' posts every single day. And I was really engaged. That's when I first made contact with you here and really looked up to what you were doing for that particular community.
Yeah, exactly. And then when we started connecting, I realized that you really had a passion for this and, you know, your analysis was on point. And don't forget all the contributions that you were doing. You were scanning the UK markets. You were putting up videos in the community on good UK stocks to look out for. So we became mentors in our own right on that particular course. You know, we were mentees, but we evolved into mentors and started teaching others on that course.
Again, back to accountability, when you're actually putting yourself on the front line, teaching others, it forces you to really think about it. And I think that's what really helped me speed up my whole learning process and helped me develop and evolve over a very short period of time. So I'll encourage each and every one of you, no matter what you're doing, whether it's investing or not, to just put yourself in a position where you're accountable. It really forces you to learn a lot faster than you would have if you were just sitting in the background.
Yeah, brilliant. Really good point. I mean, when we started being accountable to each other with the trades that we were taking, the portfolio that we were building, it absolutely changed everything. We met once a week before the week started, made sure that we had done our analysis beforehand. We would compare our analysis. And as soon as our analysis started mirroring each other and we were picking out the right trades, we knew we were onto a good accountability relationship here.
As we went along, what book do you feel really helped you learn how to invest and how to implement?
So it's a really good question. I don't think books helped me. What I would say is that books helped me understand what is possible. So the books that I recommend are Way of the Turtle by Curtis Faith, Reminiscences of a Stock Operator by Edwin Lefebvre, I believe that's how you pronounce his surname, and How I Made $2 Million in the Stock Market by Nicholas Darves. And then there's another book, which I know you love, which is Trading in the Zone by Mark Douglas. Those books really helped frame my mindset about what is possible. But in terms of actually applying the philosophy and becoming a good trader, I would say that was simply down to myself taking the material that was given to us, because I don't particularly think the material that was given to us on that course was very well presented. It was long, it was complicated, there was a lot of information. The actual mentors of the course, they weren't ever around as much as they should have been. You know, we were kind of left to fend for ourselves. This is why I go back to what I was saying about being accountable with you, because once I started discussing my trades with you, that's when I started really becoming a better trader, a better investor. So I think it's the relationship that I built with you and being able to sift through all of that information that was given to us and then create a strategy and a process that worked, that's ultimately what helped me become a good trader and a good investor, not the books. Books help lay a good foundation, but unless you've got the right knowledge and then the ability to implement that knowledge, you're not going to get anywhere. So people need to get away from books as the answers. The books aren't answers. Books are great to lay a foundation, but the answer is being around the right people and having the right information and then having the right support to execute that information. And if you've got those three elements, then you could do very well.
Yeah. Well, there was a book you mentioned there, Trading in the Zone, which you did actually mention is my favorite. I totally agree. The strategy is important. If you have a strategy which doesn't work, you're not going to make any money, regardless of who your mentor is, what books you're studying. So you definitely need the right strategy, which we use as a longer term strategy. I'm not saying day trading doesn't work. It just doesn't work for a lot of people. It's very difficult. The easiest method is a longer term strategy. But trading in the zone really helps me, because what it did for me was take my mindset away from thinking about investing as investing your money and thinking more about in terms of probabilities. So learning how to think in odds and probabilities. So if I have a strategy which gives me the edge over the market, so if it gives me higher probability over the market, all I need to do is follow that strategy as it's laid out. That's all I need to do. But it's very hard because we come from a background where we study long hours at university, we go into a job which requires more studying. So we assume that the same thing applies to investing, which in our case, because we are trend followers, we're technical investors, it requires actually less work. The more work you do, the more studying you do, it just conflicts all the other information you're getting. So less work and more focus, more discipline, more patience will actually get you better results over the time.
Yeah, really good point. Less is more. It's a concept that people don't really grasp because ultimately the human brain craves complexity. So we think that the more complex a subject matter is, the better we understand it, the more intelligent we are, and ultimately that will then translate into more money. But with investing, that isn't the case. It's the less you do, the more you make. Of course, there's a learning phase. You've got to learn the strategy. And this goes back to what I was saying, that the learning material has to be good. The way that material is taught has to be good. The mentors have to be good. And where we met on that particular course, that wasn't the case. The material wasn't really well laid out. The mentors weren't great. But we were able to take out the information that we needed and create a strategy and get results from that strategy, a long-term strategy, as Colin has mentioned, that worked. And by applying that consistently year in, year out, we've achieved, you know, phenomenal results, which if you look around our website, sublimetrading.io, you'll be able to see some of the results that we've achieved over the years. Okay, so let's kind of bring this all to an end. You really know Colin's background. You know my background, 2007, 2008. That's when Colin and I met. And then fast forward to 2018, January 2018, I approached Colin and I said, look, why are we mentoring for this other community? We can do a much better job. We know the strategies that work. We know what they need. We know what they don't need. We know what we can remove. We know what kind of tools that are required, the support that is required. Let's just create our own community. So I approached you end of 2017, Colin, and I said, look, let's do this. And of course, without any hesitation, you were in. And then January 2018, Sublime Trading was created.
Yeah, it was an amazing time because I've always wanted to create my own community, and to do it with you was a great pleasure. So us teaching others what we wanted to know, how we wanted to actually learn. So we've made the mistakes ourselves. We knew what would work in terms of teaching other people, and we just implemented it. And I think it's been an amazing journey so far. And I think it will continue to be an amazing journey. I feel like our community is really benefiting from the information we're putting out there, because the way I look at it, we're saving a lot of people from going down that whole day trading route where they can potentially lose money. As I've said before, it doesn't mean day trading doesn't work, but it just means that it hasn't worked for us. Is quite hard to implement. So I feel like we're helping other people to avoid that mistake we've made, spending years trying to pursue day trading, and we're helping them to move in a more simpler and better direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to build on what Colin is saying about day trading, I totally agree. I mean, if day trading is working for you, just remember there are sacrifices coming with it. You know, the time that you're spending in front of the screen, and also the returns will be capped. So even though day trading, you may be making money from it, you aren't making growth, and there's sacrifices that coming with that. What you want is a style that does less in terms of your amount of screen time involved, but where the returns are exponentially larger because you hold and you compound. And compounding is something that we're going to be covering in a future episode on this podcast series. And also last year, we then created the Griffin Fund. So there are a lot of people out there who absolutely love what we are doing, but don't necessarily have the time or even the inclination to want to learn, because there is a learning phase. And again, the learning phase is not weeks and months. The way we have created the learning phase, you can have it down in days. It's learning a set of rules that you have to follow. These are very, very simple techniques. The expression is trading is simple, but not easy, or investing is simple, but not easy. The best techniques are simple to learn. But following those rules week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out to grow an account, that's where the challenges come in. So you can have it all down within days. You can understand what needs to be done with the right information, the right tools, the right support, which we have here at Sublime Trading. You then have to execute it. Now, of course, not everyone wants to go through that learning phase. And that's why we then created the Griffin Fund, So the Griffin Fund, again, is for sophisticated investors who don't have the time to learn, but still want to take advantage of our results and the strategies because they can see the exceptional results that we've achieved over the last 10 years. So since 2018, Colin and I, we came together. We created Sublime Trading in 2018. This is our education platform. And then we've also got the Griffin Fund, where we invest on behalf of our members effectively. And there we have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. That's a background of myself and Kola. We are the co-founders of Sublime Trading and the Griffin Fund. I hope you enjoyed that. We will be sharing this out in social media. Don't forget to let us know what you think on social media. Any final words, Kola?
Yeah, I'll just say I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. I'm sure you've taken a lot from this episode. The main key points I would say is follow your passion, be accountable, and if investing is for you, then definitely recommend looking at the longer term approach. And look out for our episode on compounding because that's the secret sauce on how to grow wealth.
And that is an excellent place to end today's episode. If you enjoyed today's episode, guys, don't forget to follow us and don't be greedy, guys. Do share this out amongst your friends and family or anyone else who you feel would benefit from today's episode.
And don't forget to click on the link for the scorecard below. And once you complete that, you will get a free gift from us, which is the Launchpad Starter Kit.
Yeah, fantastic free gift. Excellent. See you on the next episode, guys.
See you.